Welcome back. If you aren't already following Naked, please take a minute to do so so you don't miss out on any future episodes. Each follow means so much and it actually helps a lot. If you have more than just a minute, it would be absolutely incredible if you could leave a review and maybe even share an episode with a friend. I'm relatively new to the pod world, especially new to the things that are important in the podcasting world. And apparently reviews and follows are up there on the list of importance. So I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. Welcome to Naked, where stories unfold. I'm your host, Janelle, a once former pastor's wife who exchanged small town living for a nomadic life. The unexpected change in our life led my husband and our four kids to traveling the world. From years of being rooted in our small town to the thrill of wandering the world, our story has been anything but ordinary. On our journeys, we've met amazing people, learned their way of life, and heard their unique stories, which has led me to understand the profound impact of shared experiences. In each episode, we explore moments of transformation, guided by one single question. Is there a time in your life when everything changed? We invite ordinary storytellers like yourself to share the often unexpected turns in life. So grab a seat and settle in. This is the Naked Podcast. Do you recall the time in your life when you started to change from a child to that preteen, awkward kind of stage where your body starts shifting and moving and you start seeing yourself differently and maybe feeling a bit awkward in a place that you felt so comfortable in before? I can remember this feeling oh too well. I remember walking into my school and not sure where to put my arms when I was walking. It became so overwhelming. I was like, should I put them at my sides in my pockets? Should I cross them around my belly? Like, I just didn't know where to put my hands. And thinking like everyone was watching me, and I looked around and nobody was watching me. But it felt like I was so insecure in this place that I had felt so at home in for my whole life. Being a mom of three girls, I've had the opportunity to see my girls kind of move through the season. And also I have five nieces, so I got to watch them kind of grow and going through the season of childhood to teenhood to now adults. And I think watching them and seeing them in those earlier years reminded me of my younger self and how I felt so alone and just doing this awkward season of just not knowing how to do it. And then what to do with the words that were new to me. I used to just never think about how I looked in the mirror or the pimple that popped that came out of nowhere, or just like if my hips were too big or my nose was too long, or these things that just never were a part of my conversations that would get a ramble in my head. Now they became things that seemed to go on repeat and replay. And so as these girls were growing up and going through this, I was just reminded of my younger self and how important it is to know that you're not alone and to feel like you're not crazy too. And just to have a space for good conversation about these things and not be quiet about them. So I've done a lot of chats with my own girls and had the opportunity to chat with my nieces as well. And my guest today is actually my niece, Gabrielle. And she 100% understands this feeling and knows the lingering noise in her heads that can lead to the most unhealthy versions of ourselves. And I also get that on such a deep level. So her and our conversations over the past decade, we've had so many, I guess, questions and conversations that have led to things about how to love our skin and the one that we called home and how to make the noise in our head stops. And will there be a day when the food isn't the first and last thing that is up on our mind when we wake up in the morning? And will we ever feel enough? These are just a few of the conversations and topics we've kind of covered over the years. And today she's here to talk about how she began to love her body, feel at home in her skin, and find a way to a healthy way of thinking. I am beyond grateful that she is here today to share her story. I hope that you feel encouraged and that you feel seen, and today that you know that you're not alone. Thank you so much for being here. Well, thank you so much for being here to my listeners and to my guests today. I am so honored to have my sweet niece Gabrielle with me. We have had the privilege of living very closely through a lot of her childhood years and even into her teen years. It wasn't until we started traveling that there was like less of that, but we have so many similarities, I think, in some of our journey of our life, as well as just like, we're just silly kids, really, silly gals. So I am really, really honored to have you here. Every time I have someone on the show or on the podcast, I feel so privileged, but I feel like that even goes deeper when it's like my nieces and my nephews and family, because I know that it can be hard to share your story with someone that you don't know, but it can even be sometimes harder to share it with someone that you do know. It can be strange that way. So I am just so, so grateful. So thank you for being here, for taking
the time out of your life and carving out space for you to be on Naked today. I'm really honored that you're here and sharing your story. Yeah, and before we get settled into all the good things that are going to unfold today, I'll let Gab tell you a little bit about herself and where life has her in this very season.
Yeah. First, I want to say thank you so much for having me on. I remember as like a little kid dreaming about sitting at the big kid table and also trying to like coerce the adults to play the little kid games with us, like get you outside to play hide and go seek or home free or whatever we were in. And I remember every conversation with you, I didn't feel like I was a kid asking to be like sitting at the adult table. I felt like there was an even playing field in terms of I never felt belittled. I never felt that my feelings or emotions or experiences weren't important. And that was that feeling I still treasure. And I'm so thankful that I've always had that feeling when we have conversations, no matter what season of life I'm in. And I'm also thankful that you were one of the only aunts who always joined in when we played home free. If there was an invitation, you'd do at least one round. Yeah, so I am, I'll start with the unfun stuff and then move to the more fun stuff. I'm currently a communications student, a science student turned communications student. I just jumped right from one side of the spectrum to the other, but I've always had a passion for conversations like this and finding ways to connect with people, the power of language to like sum up an experience or an emotion that feels so hard to tap into and to conceptualize. I love how grounding language can be. And so communications really does make sense for me. And other than that, I have a love for the outdoors, like we were talking about before we started recording. So this summer, I just got to experience the Oregon coast for the first time. And as you do, we were looking at pictures before we drove up and we had had rainy weather the whole time. But in my mind, it only made sense that this was going to be like a magical experience where the clouds cleared and we had a perfect sunny day. And of course, our drive up the Oregon coast was the rainiest, windiest, grossest day. It was so bad that when we stopped to go on the beach, there were people literally standing at the bottom of the stairs looking out onto the beach, but warning people coming down. If you cross this threshold, whatever the wind does, like you've been warned. You've been warned it's a battlefield out there. Like you might lose a hat, you might lose a coat. Like they're like, okay, just know it's treacherous out there. So our day on the Oregon coast was not what I thought it was going to be, but I've always just loved getting outside and being with people. I find I love the playfulness that it brings out in people. You feel like a child again when you're in nature, just absolutely shrunken by the size of these massive trees and big skies and the ocean. So yeah, that's a little bit about who I am and what I love.
Wow, that does sound really incredible. I think it's funny when you mention that, because when we first started traveling, I would look up pictures of like where we were going and I'd have like a lot of expectations about, oh, like this is going to be like this. And then I'd get there and be like, okay, like this is much different than what I was hoping.
Really, you're like, oh, this is not in the pictures. That's so funny.
Totally. And I've learned to just be like, I don't like we're moving in a week and I'm just like, I don't even know where we're going. Like I have the name in my mind. I know that the general area where we're going, but I have no idea what to expect. I'm like, I don't know if there's anything to do in the area. I'm like, I'm just going to let it be a surprise because sometimes I feel like I do get in that space where I'm just like we lived in Scotland for the winter. Right. And I've never been in Scotland for the winter, but I've been there in the fall. And the fall was amazing. Like we were out for walks. It was so nice. And being Canadian, like I like to be in areas that aren't cold typically for the winter. And so Greg's like, I don't think we should do this. My husband's like, I don't think we should go to Scotland for the winter. Like, I don't think you guys understand. And I was like, no, it's going to be great. Like, it's wonderful. And it was great for September, October, and then part of November. And then the cold set in. And anybody who's from Scotland or Ireland or England, you understand the cold. It's much similar if you're Canadian as the winters in the kind of in Vancouver area, where it's gray for a really long time. You completely lose connection with the sun. You don't even know if it really exists anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's when it's cold, it's humid cold. So it's like cold mm-hmm. to your bone cold.
Yeah.
So it's different than being in Alberta where it's a dry cold. It's doable. Mm-hmm. The sun is always shining. So you're like, yeah, it's a beautiful day. But I remember when Ellie and I went, it was like probably 2.5 months into not seeing the sun. And we were at the grocery store and we came out and all of a sudden I saw like a peak of the sun. And I'm like, oh my gosh, the sun. And so we were like both ran and we're like, just want to feel the sun in my face. Like it was a small little sliver in the clouds. And we're like, there is the sun.
Oh my God.
But I mean, it was just the things I didn't realize going to Scotland. Yeah. People tell you, yeah, it's kind of dreary. It's kind of whatever. But yeah. I mean, there is what you look for, you'll find. So there was like tons of beauty along the way, but it was just different than what I had envisioned. My whole idea of like, Scotland's going to be in the park every day and it's going to be, I don't need to wear gloves. And I was like,
yeah,
I was wearing gloves every day.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
If only. So funny, right? When like you have these expectations and the world is just like, check yourself. Like, yeah, you're gonna get lost in this city too, sister.
Yeah. That's the beauty of adventure. You don't really know where you're going. You're going somewhere. Totally. It'll show itself eventually.
Yeah.
I have to ask you, what are you drinking today? Because that's like my favorite question. Well, not really, but one of them.
You know, I wish it was something more exciting, but we've had a water shortage in Calgary. We had a water main break. And so they keep giving these warnings, like, we could run out in 2 weeks if you don't make attempts to conserve water. Now, saying that, water feels a lot more precious. So I am drinking a big glass of water today. But if I wasn't drinking water, I would be drinking Phil and Sebastian's coffee. They have a mix called The Standard. And it's nothing bougie, but I get them to grind it up for my AeroPress. And I just have an AeroPress coffee with the Standard Phil and Sebastian's grounds. They're like a lovely local cafe and they're my favorite lately. So that would amazing. Be, and if I was really feeling special, I'd like froth milk and put a little bit of honey on top. And that's my favorite morning drink. How about you? What are you drinking?
Fancy. Well, I oftentimes don't have anything fancy, but today I brought something. So there's this local company here in Barcelona that they make like a really condensed version. Like it's basically the richest form of chai that I've had. That's not like just steeping your own tea. And it's so, I had the chai when we were out and it's not sweet. Like a lot of times you get a chai and it's a powder and it's really, really sweet, but there's no sweetness to it. It just feels like very authentic spiced chai. Mm. So I just put mine with a little oat milk. A little ice cube and a little chai, and I'm on the last bit of my little container here, but which is perfect for leaving soon, but it's very, very tasty. So cheers.
Yum.
Cheers. Our water to chai.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. I try to get my hand on chai whenever I can because I just love it. And sometimes it's really authentic and it's tasty, and other times it's a little more sugary. So
yeah, totally. You can taste the spices and pick them out.
Yeah.
There's nothing like that. I love chai. It's like a cozy drink. Like you instantly feel settled when you have a chai.
It's true. Hey, it's like, it's very comforting. And I think because there are certain spices that are so like significant to making a chai be a chai that if you can find something that holds the value of that and you can taste that, it's like, it's like a bit of taste of home or whatever that looks like to you, like a little taste of like a comfort, like having a blanket in your paper. It's just
totally
a way to connect you with something that feels comfortable.
Yeah. It's so soothing for, like, I find it so soothing for my stomach too. I love like the cinnamon, and I love that it feels good while you're drinking and it feels good afterwards. It's like the win-win.
Totally. Your whole body's just like, all zenified.
Yeah. Totally. It's my beige. My beige totally. Drink. Totally.
It's your beige. And actually, it is beige. It's actually very perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Well, thank you so much for being here again, Gab. I really appreciate it. I feel like we have had conversations similar to this in the past. You and I are not strangers to recording together. I think this is our third time.
Yeah.
Which I'm so grateful we've had those opportunities. And when I was thinking about the season and just guests that I'm having on, your name came to mind many, many times. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to ask my sweet girl if she would want to join me once again and share part of your story. So I don't know where we're going today. I have an idea where we might be going today. But the question I ask everybody is, can you tell us about a time in your life when everything changed?
I promised myself today that I wouldn't overthink it, as you said, and I just say the first thing that came to mind. And so in terms of the first thing that came to mind is we were sitting in a cafe in Sorso Cafe in Airdrie, and we were talking about where I was with my relationship to food and my body, because as you know, that was something that was so difficult for me at that time. And I remember the question you asked me then was, if you gained 50 pounds tomorrow, just woke up and your body was different, how would you feel? And I think up until that point in our conversation, I'd probably been dancing around answers, you know, maybe having a hard time pinpointing exactly where I was and how my recovery from an eating disorder was going. And I remember when you'd asked me that question, I just started to cry. And I think that was, it stands out to me because that was a moment when I realized that something that was in many ways out of my control had such a deep hold on my identity and how much I loved myself. And I think that's when I really started to crave change that was lasting and change that was flexible. You know, up until that point, I had imagined that when I had quote unquote recovered, that I would feel, I would recover to a point that was steady, you know, that in terms of what my body looked like, in terms of what I ate, in terms of exercise, my goal for recovery up until that point was to get to a point where I could manage being at a set weight and love myself at that set weight and love myself within a certain boundary. And that question kind of took the lid off and showed me another possibility. And as much as that question scared me, it also made me realize I want more for myself. I want more for my recovery, and I want more for my acceptance of my body. Yeah.
Wow. So do you remember after our conversation? I think a lot of times when there can be many efforts in our life to change the thing that is eating us up or the thing that is feels like it's destroying us. And there can be many, sometimes many failed attempts because we're just not sure how to go about it. So when we were sitting there together and, you know, beyond that moment together, do you remember what it was, or was there something that you're like, there was a knowledge or an understanding or an awakening, if you will, about what needed to be different about your recovery?
I think that I'm just trying to place myself back in that chapter of my life, because I think when I think about that, my recovery as a whole, it's felt like a lot of trial and error, and a lot of something I would try and do quite often was latch onto what healthy looks like in someone else and just try and copy that. And so, you know, for a time it was my friend in high school, and then for another time it was my mom, for another time it was you, where I was like, okay, these people seem to have had it, like they have it figured out. And they're people that I consider to be beautiful. And so I was trying to embody whatever someone else did that I looked up to that looked healthy. And so there was all these different trying on. And then for a while, it was like influencers on social media. For a long time, I would just jump from like one YouTuber to the next. And the common thing between them all was that at one point they had struggled with, you know, weight or their relationship to food and their relationship to exercise. And then they went through some transformative period, often by themselves, and then had arrived at this new point where they were now healthy and happy and loving life and could comfortably talk about those hard experiences that were in the past. And so I thought my recovery has to look like that. And I, now looking back, I realized I put so much pressure on myself to do it alone and to do it somewhat in silence for a time. I didn't realize that instead of the goal of recovery being like reaching a certain point, it should instead be that you can accept the changes that come, like inevitably come in your life, and accept their inevitability. So much of what I wanted prior was just to be guaranteed stability and to be guaranteed that I could manage, like I could manage this part of my life. And I wish that looking back, I could tell myself, what if your goal was to like let go, you know? What if one day you don't even think about food from meal to meal, and you don't think about what people think about your body when you're dancing? And what about like, what about when you go for a run, you go for you because you love the feeling of the wind on your face and the feeling of your heart pumping, and you're not checking distance and you're not checking calories and you're not even going for a goal time. You just love being alive. And yeah, I wish I could tell myself then that that's possible and you're going to get there. Wow. Yeah. I didn't expect to cry this early.
None of us ever do.
I also decided not to wear makeup today, to just show up, and I'm glad now that I did. yeah. Did that answer your question? I don't know if it did.
Yeah. So do you feel like part of it was like everybody's recovery, like you say, it's so customized to each of us, right? Mm-hmm. To think that like, I think about this in many ways of my life, but like whether you're raising children and you're trying to do it the same, each kid needs something different, as do you and I, like needed a different journey to where we found a healthy version of ourselves.
Yeah.
So do you feel like in your journey, it was more of like a self, like just working through self-acceptance and just being, being okay to just let go, like you mentioned?
You know, it's funny. Sorry, go ahead. I was just going to say, I think that self-acceptance was such a huge part of my recovery. I think that oftentimes, especially when I was recovering, I thought if we solved the eating disorder, everything else would click into place. That was the center of the tension and discomfort I was experiencing in my mental health. But really, I found that the more I learned to have compassion for myself, to embrace and celebrate my own humanity and my imperfection, the less my eating disorder was something I struggled with. And so I thought, I wish I could just have flipped that around, because it really took me, I would say, until last year to really feel what it's like to settle into a sense of loving who you are and having flexible expectations for yourself. And that's something an eating disorder does not allow you. It doesn't allow you flexible expectations. Yeah. And so a huge part of my recovery, I think, kind of parallels my transition from sciences to communications. I have nothing against sciences. I'll say that right now. I love my time in sciences. It was so great. But at that point in my life, I loved numbers. I loved things that were predictable. I loved things that I also loved things that challenged me, or I thought I wanted to work really, really hard at something. And that's the only way it could feel satisfying, is if it hurt a little bit. And the pain was a sign to me that it was working. And so I pushed through those years thinking, you know, I have something that's measurable. There's always one right answer. And it hurts a little bit, but that probably means it's worth it. And slowly over time, you know, through a gap year and then another attempt at another university and another degree, I actually have done technically three different first years of science degrees. One I was only in for 2 weeks and then I switched back to the other one. But I tried all these different versions. Like in my recovery, I kept latching on to all these different versions of what I thought was the ideal for me. And then when I just took time to step back and ask myself, like, what do you really need? Like, again, this comes back to our conversations. We had one where you were asking, what makes your soul feel alive? You know, and I allowed myself to learn how much I loved food. I love food and it's nothing to be ashamed of. I love the experience of sitting down for a meal and letting the flavors just wash over you, experiencing something you've never experienced before. And the joy that it brings to people, the comfort that it brings to people. And I love movement. I love feeling free in my body. I love feeling strong. I love connecting with other people through like games and silliness. I love that it can be structured or it can be so unstructured. I love that it can be chaotic or it can be very strategic. Like it's beautiful what we can do. And when I started looking from the inside out instead of the outside in for like other people's expectations and external standards of beauty and success and all of these things, and started recognizing like there's a wealth of beauty inside me. What if I just started opening the doors to let that flow out into my life and just found the right channels instead of trying to curate my sound? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's when things started to click into place and feel like there was so much more allowance for me to just like live my life and enjoy my life without all of these strict expectations, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting how you're talking about it. It's like, I realize if there's pain, then it's like, it's working.
Yeah.
Right? Like that idea that, and I don't know where it started for you. Maybe we can go back there, but I think I remember in high school, there was a lot of expectations that whether whether it's unspoken expectations that others put on us or ourselves, that is like, there's all this like angst that can be wrapped around this achievement that you're trying to achieve, you know?
Yeah.
And like, it's interesting, like the idea of the pain being the fact that it's working. Like even the fact that like controlling what you're eating, that the pain and that the pain and how what you're seeing in yourself, that it means it's doing something, like that having that control of the pain, really, essentially, you know?
Yeah.
And seeing how that's played out and controlled, like you say, education and the way that you thought you had to go because of the expectations wherever they came from.
Yeah.
And your body and like this idea that you need to be a certain way, and you need to manage the certain amount of foods and what type of foods and, you know, looking for people's map on how to do it. Like social media is, there's beautiful ways and platforms that are beautiful guides to living a really great life. There's also this other thing that can come where it can become very comparison and, you know, looking at what someone's doing and comparing it to what you aren't or are doing and finding your value and your worth in that, because it's measuring up to a person that you idolize or look up to.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I think your question about where did that come from? I look back and I think it's so clear for me to see now that I kept choosing environments where struggle was normal, where struggle was idealized, where struggle was equivalent to growth and equivalent to success. And from my workplaces to you know, my relationships, like extracurriculars, school, everything in my life, my training, like my own exercise regime. I would wake up before school at like, you know, 5:30, 6, and do a workout before I went to school. And it was always a high intensity workout. Like there was never like, there was no zen. There was no beige walls. No. Then actually it's funny, my room then was bright yellow, so I used to really embrace that. But yeah, I just didn't have, I never had a place for myself to like, and even when I journaled at that age, I would journal about goals and the next thing I should be striving towards. And it's funny, I think that as a kid, and though this continued into later in my teenage years, but especially when you're a kid, it's easy to adopt the simplified version of something. Like complexity is harder to understand when you're a child. And so if I was trying to strive for something, or from all the stories that I heard and all the stories of success, the stories of achievement, all of them were about struggle. And, or at least in my mind, that's the thing that I took. I simplified what in reality was someone learning to balance career and home life and things that are hard and things that come naturally to them and rest and pushing. I simplified that to everything that's worth it is hard. And that's what I embodied for years. And yeah, it always felt like a stuffing down of what I was good at and what I truly loved and what made me come alive, because those things felt easy, and easy's not worth it, you know?
It's like the hard was the reward.
Yeah, the hard was the reward, and the hard would lead you to something better. But that's not, I mean, especially when you have, when you're so flat, self-flatulating, that is not the truth. The hard just gets harder, you know?
Yeah. Wow. It's so interesting, the things that drive us, you know, and we don't, and that they can come in as a child and somehow they nuzzle their way into us and they are the one that inform our decisions without us even realizing that they're taking over and they're taking control until we realize like, oh my gosh, like I do have an eating disorder. Yeah. And what is the cornerstone in all of that? What is the pillar that's made that be okay?
Yeah.
And then dialing it back to, like you said, going back to your childhood and realizing if there was a struggle like that, you could see that story is like that the accomplishment was that was because they went through the struggle. Mm-hmm. It wasn't because of the enjoyment. And like, I remember us talking about that, like what makes you feel alive? Mm-hmm. I think so many of us, we miss that. And we end up doing things that can actually be like the thing that sucks our soul. And, you know, it leaves us in such an empty place.
Yeah.
And instead of realizing like, no, we were like created with a passion for something. And oftentimes those things get stripped away by ideals of things that are formed as childhood or teenage years. And they become the very big driving force in our whole life.
Yeah.
And like you said, I loved what you said. You're like, to go for a run, just to feel the wind on my face, like that, to do these things just because you're alive and you can do them. I think that's such an oversight in humanity and in living and breathing, is that like, I was talking to somebody yesterday about this and it's like, while you and I are sitting here, like our hearts are beating. And like our eyes are seeing each other and our tongues are tasting whatever it is that we're drinking and our hands are moving. And like all of you is the only home that you'll ever have and possess in this world, in this lifetime. Mm-hmm. And it allows you to do all the things.
Yeah.
And so often the words in our head are so, about what we aren't, are so much louder than the words in our head telling us what we are.
Mm-hmm.
And that those words become the driving to the next, to the greater struggle. To the bigger accomplishment.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. If you can like latch on to words that are healing, like even like sayings like, I know that I'm enough today and I don't have to prove myself. That was, I would say that to myself driving into work. I remember saying, you don't have to prove yourself to anyone. You don't have to prove yourself to anyone. Like, I would say that over and over because there were so many areas where I felt like I had to show up and become something. And, you know, it's interesting. I think when you start showing up knowing that you're enough, I felt more and more that people would just be like, yeah, okay. It's like, it's like when you, it's like my older sister who is, we're only 18 months apart and she's very well read and she's very intelligent, but she doesn't know everything. But I sincerely thought she knew everything because her confidence when she said something, like if she was like, yeah, it's going to rain today. And it didn't matter if there was clear blue skies. I was like, yeah, Michaela says it's going to rain. So probably going to rain. Like I just instantly accepted because her confidence was so, so just, she was confident, you know,
genuine.
And for so long, I wished that to be the case for myself, but I was looking, always looking to other people, like validate me, please. Like, right. Tell me I'm enough. Tell me I can stop running so hard to catch up to you. And, and I always thought that everyone was so far ahead of me. It just, it took me time to realize, girlfriend, you're all running your own race. They're not even in the same track as you. They're not even on the same planet as you. Their context is different. Their internal world is different. Their passions are different. Like, you're in your own freaking lane and it's beautiful. Enjoy the scenery, you know? Like, love what you're in and show up knowing, like, yeah, this is my world. Thank God you don't have to run mine and I don't have to run yours. We are both doing our best, you know? Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting what you said. Like, it's interesting what drives us. I think that, you know, it's easier said than done. And yeah, I want to acknowledge that I heard a lot of stories about recovery that just sounded like one day you woke up and it was fine. But it really is gradual baby steps and lots of support and lots of, yeah, two steps forward and one step back and like getting to know yourself over and over and over, sometimes each day for a while. But I wish that you could just exchange your drive for something else, you know, like if I could just exchange the drive in that season of my life from, I wish that I was enough to, I know I'm enough. Like, I know there's no one that can convince me that I am not capable, that I am not beautiful, that I am not just as deserving to be here, you know?
Wow, God.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. When did you feel that transition inside of you where you're like, I know that I'm enough. Like I can think of a time for myself.
Yeah.
When that started to change for me. And it wasn't until in my 30s actually, where beginning of my 30s, where I was just telling a friend about this yesterday, where I stood in front of the mirror naked. And the first time I did it was, I was a mess of faults. Tears. And cause I struggled with an eating disorder, not early in my life, but like in my 20s when I had little kids and stuff. And it was really difficult just like coming out of, you know, your body's a transforming magic, you know, mystery. And, you know, you're expanding and you're like a balloon and you just grow these babies and then you like don't know what to do afterwards. 22 years ago, there's a lot more, lot less information about that than there is now. And a lot less people were honest about it back then. And so there's this expectation to just like be what you were before and realize that you'll never be what you were before. You're like a new version of yourself. And that's what continues to happen as you bring little people into the world. And so it wasn't until my early 30s where I was just like, I wanted to find a way to love me. And I kept showing up in front of that mirror naked until I could say, like, I love you. mm. and I'm proud of you and you're mm. enough. And mm. it was like a ton of emotion that was wrapped around that experience. And I think for me, it's, I realized it's not about accomplishing something,
yeah.
but it's about the continual journey of mm. realizing like we're human, we're women, like we're going to, yeah. we're going to be 80 and we're going to have wrinkles and we're going to yeah. work through that. And we're going to be going through menopause. Like I'm in the thick of that. And it's like, your body is changing again.
Yeah.
And so it's the constant evolution of your body is changing. And so is your thought pattern and these things. And to realize it's not about reaching the finish line. It's about mm. doing the journey.
Like, yes.
And walking out and realizing that sometimes I'm going to feel really insecure and I'm going to yeah. feel really down about something. And I'm going mm. to need to remind myself who I am.
Mm.
For those of you who are going through menopause, you'll understand what I'm talking about, where you're just like, it's a whole new world again. You're just like,
yeah,
I never knew this part about me, and I never knew this part could even exist.
Yeah.
And so you're going to be becoming reacquainted with yourself over and over and over again, and to be gentle mm-hmm. with yourself and to revisit the mirror. And like you said, to tell yourself like, I am beautiful and I am yeah. enough, and I'm not yeah. looking for anyone else to prop me up, to tell me mm-hmm. that something, because we both know from our experiences that that doesn't change us, that yeah. like, that knowing comes from the internal, the deep parts of who we are. Yeah. And it's wonderful when someone compliments you, but that doesn't change how you feel about yourself.
Yeah.
That contentment comes from deep inside.
Yeah.
So I'm interested in just talking about that. Like, do you, I don't know where you are in your story, but do you feel like in your journey, it's something that you revisit in the sense of like reminding yourself of who you are, or do you yeah. feel like you're in a place of, I don't know, like where you're in a place of deep contentment. If you understand what I'm saying.
Yes, totally.
You know, like an alcoholic will always say, I'm a recovering alcoholic
yeah.
for my whole life, you know, yeah. and they're counting the days from the day one. It's not like done it, I'm over that. It's like, no, yeah. it's a journey, you know?
Yeah, totally. I'm so glad you asked this, because I never want to misrepresent what it looks like to live after an eating disorder, you know, and what it's like to move on. Cause that's what was such a big trap for me, was that I was always thinking these people just arrived and they never struggled with it after. And it was upsetting. Honestly, it felt hopeless because I was so far from that. Like I could have a good day or a good couple hours. That's where I was. And I was hearing these people be like, yeah, no, I just never, I was like, what? Like, did you, is there hope for me? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And, I think for me, how it looked, first of all, yes, day to day, still thoughts come up all the time. And, you know, whether that's comparison with someone else or just an awareness of my body, like I'll be, you know, in a public place and all of a sudden I realize it's like my attention is like a vacuum, like it's sucked inwards and I'm just so conscious of how I look. Or, you know, whether it's a thought before or after a meal, like, you know, just, I'm sure people who've gone through it are familiar with those thoughts, or even the tendency to want a body check, or the thoughts that come when you try on a pair of pants and they're just a little bit tighter. And it could be because your body is doing magical things that it's supposed to do, you know, moving into menopause or just having a regular cycle, things that we can't even fully comprehend the science of because they're so complex and intricate and amazing.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel that way when you put those pants on. It could be that, but I think that now those thoughts feel more, think about meditation, they feel more like leaves floating by rather than like a boat that I'm riding off a waterfall. Like I don't have to sit in it and I don't have to feel that those are the truth. I've learned so much about how your thoughts are not you and your thoughts are not truth. Your brain just spits things out. Like, it's mm-hmm. just like an AI random generator. It's just grabbing material and throwing it at you. And the real skill is being able to sit back and watch them, either watch them float or be like, yeah, I like that one. You can stick around. Like, mm-hmm. that, yeah, I'll take that. Like,
yeah,
dish up, you know? Yeah. You kind of, it's like having a buffet of thoughts and you can just leave. I mean, it's not a passive process, but it's getting easier to leave those things and to keep walking. Mm-hmm. I would say that my journey to get there, though it's consistent, it still continues. Right now, it looks like a lot of openness on those hard days. I have a really supportive partner, and if I'm just noticing that I'm thinking more about weight or about appearance, I tell him, I let him know, like, I'm really struggling with this today, or this has been on my mind. And he always asks, is there anything I can do for you? Thank you for letting me know. And he's just conscious about what he says. It doesn't really take him changing anything. It's just let some pressure out, you know?
Totally.
And lets me know that I'm not alone. He's also very realistic about his own insecurities and changes, and is very reassuring that my love for you is not based on how you look, and it's not based on the size of your body. So rest assured that no matter how you feel, they're just thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're just thoughts.
Mm-hmm. And I love that.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
You got it. You go.
The other piece, with my friends, like, I have a friend that we've been really open about our experiences to the point where it's like comfortable and healthy, because it's easy to want to go over everything. But when you're in it with another friend, I think it's important to also respect that you're at different points. And so we've shared with each other some of the things that we struggle with. And now if I'm really having a hard day, I know I can reach out to her. And what she suggested, what she had practiced before, is that on those days when you want to reach out, if you're just really in your head and you just need someone to remind you who you are, just sending a text that says, like, speak truth to the other person. And she just loads me up with compliments, and they're sincere. You know, they're like things about my personality and how it feels to be around me. Those things that don't change, even if my size does. Yeah. And that goes both ways. So that's a practice that she's put in place and that I got to jump in with her. And then in terms of my relationship with myself, when things started to really click into place for me was when I moved away. And for me, moving away was important because it allowed me to step outside some of those expectations and completely just, it felt like a complete reset. When you move, you know, those relationships that you keep up are the ones that you put time into. And it felt so weird looking at my schedule and seeing it wide open and knowing everything I put in my day was my decision. Mm-hmm. And to me, that felt like the reset I needed to give myself permission to just focus on enjoying being with myself. And so I did a lot of counseling. I had weekly counseling, not that this is prescriptive, but I had weekly counseling for the entire time that I was there. I used every last cent of my benefits in such a short amount of time. And I remember I kept asking my counselor, like, is this working? Is this doing anything? Because when this session ends, I have to go back into the world and live it. And it's so freaking scary every time. Like, you don't know what it's like to live with me, to live in my head. And she would reassure me, you know, like, these are some attitudes and some things that you're saying that I've never heard you say before. And we'll see each other next week. You know, we'll just keep one step at a time. And suddenly, and this is the thing that it's honest for me, but it's not the same for everyone. All of a sudden, 1 month, like, I think it was like the roots were being grown and then a sprout popped above the ground. And suddenly things started to feel like, oh, my mind is still and it's quiet. Like for months before, I genuinely hated myself. Like I felt bad talking to people because I wanted to apologize. I'm so sorry you have to look at me, and I'm so sorry you have to talk to me. And I was serving at that time, and I just remember it was like jumping off a cliff, like that drop in your stomach over and over again. And then I started to see this little sprout pop above the ground, and I felt just a little bit more room in my head. And I heard myself saying to myself, it's okay, you're tired. It's okay. Like, you're not hungry, but you really wanted that chocolate. So, like, gosh, girl, enjoy it. Enjoy the flavor. Enjoy the comfort. And I started enjoying being with people again. I started hearing what they were saying and hearing myself laughing. And it was real, you know, it was real laughter. And I still remember, like, social media can be so toxic or so beautiful, but I made like this compilation reel of all these little clips of my life over the last year of sunrises and sunsets I'd seen at the place I was living in Kelowna, where I had moved to, and little clips of like just the small things in life, you know, pouring a cup of coffee or like my friend's smile at me or little moments in nature. And I felt like a full-on narcissist. I watched that video, I couldn't even tell you how many times. And I cried because I was like, I love my life. And I feel like I can feel that other people love me, and I'm not trying to argue it or fight for it anymore. Yeah, so it's not just a sudden thing. It's daily. It's a journey, like you said, and it's not about arriving. It's about patience, really. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, patience and support.
That's so many things are going through my head as you're talking and just thinking about the things you're saying, going back to like having a partner that you can be like, hey, I'm feeling like there's some stuff coming up. I'm not feeling quite myself, to having a place of understanding with him, to be able to communicate with your friend and be like, you have that key phrase where it's like, she knows what that means and what you need.
Yeah.
To seeing a therapist and going through like, is this going to get better?
Yeah.
And I like to think of it, and it reminds me so much of parts of my own journey too, and having a partner that you can share the hardest and the darkest things with, because you know, it's a safe place and that you'll always land on your feet with them. And I like to think of it as a dark room in our mind. It's like a dark room when we sit there. And then you tell your partner, and it's like there's a little candle lit off to the left.
Yeah.
And the darkness can't fully exist. It can't fully take up all of that space because light is in the room. And then you have a friend, and it's another light in the room. And then you talk to a therapist, and it's another light in the room. And you realize that you're not alone in the dark room anymore. And taking like what you said, like I said, you took the lid off the top, you know, that pressure that exists in a dark space is so consuming.
Yeah.
And I think it's the thing that can snuff some of us out completely. Yeah. Because we don't have any light on in the room. And like light is the savior. It's the having these comfortable spaces, people in your life where you can talk about these things. Those are the things that we need to know. A, we're not alone. And B, we're still loved. And we're still here. You know, and we can come through it. It's going to be a process. And sometimes the dark days come out of nowhere, like you said, and you're just like, I didn't even see that coming, you know? And it's like, okay, but to be honest in that and not let that thing become all consuming, right? Yeah. And I think with knowledge and with growth and with learning about mental health and these things, you realize like, who is in your camp with you and who can you rely on? And if you don't have anyone, if you're listening today and you don't have anyone, know that there's supports and people there to help you to like look that stuff up in your community, wherever you are. There are people who are there to hold your hand and to help put a light on in that dark space with you, that you are not alone. Because it's with the people holding us and with people embracing us in our stories that we find the hope and the courage to continue on. Through having that space not be all consuming, that we're sitting there in a dark room and we feel alone. And it's so beautiful, Gav, that you did like the hard work, you know, and it's not easy. Anyone who's been in the situation or is going through the situation or seen someone go through it, you know, it's not easy, but there is light. There is light out there. We just have to find the supports that we can rely on. And reminding us who we are, and then having like that self-love and falling in love with this person again. Like I think about when you were just little, I can still hear your little Gabrielle voice when you were just like a little cartoon character voice. And, you know, and like getting enamored. I remember like you kids being, you know, in the bathtub enamored with like your squishy skin. Yeah. And like I wrote this piece a while ago about like the beauty of a child who is enamored with their little belly button. In fact, sometimes it's your friend, and it's the talking little part of your belly that you have a buddy with you everywhere you go. And I remember my kids doing that, you know, like just having a friend with themselves, really. And then you go through these seasons and you grow up and you can become so awkward. It's like you mentioned before, it's like I can recall the day that I went through an auditorium at school and I became very aware of my arms, and I was like, where do I put these arms? Like, what do I do with these arms? Like,
when did they get here?
Yeah, like everyone's watching me. Do they should be fast? Should I be crossing across my chest? Should I be hanging them around my waist? Should I put them in my pockets? Like, what do I do with these things?
Yeah.
You know, that's normal. Like that's normal growing, because there's so much hormonal stuff changing and our bodies are doing things and we're growing parts we didn't know we were going to grow. Yeah. And it's all this transformation. We're just these beautiful beings that just can continue to grow. And and I think we can get lost in that sometimes. And because it all happens so quickly, and it depends on who's around us, and it informs how we feel about those seasons. And, you know, I remember one friend saying, she's like, I didn't realize I had big arms until my mom was talking about her big arms.
Oh.
You know, and it's like the things that we don't realize that we just pick up on the sideline. Yeah. Like you said, it's like your brain and your mind is there's thoughts that come, and sometimes it does feel like a big cement truck that just took over and it's not leaving. But you know, and it wants to claim residence there, and realizing that like, no, like these thoughts are coming, we're picking up things off magazines, off social media, off someone's comment that passes by, you know, somebody we know, family members, whatever, we're picking up and we're all confirming these ideas of what we're supposed to be. When in such a informative years, you know, the childhood and into our teens is so much that we're just picking it all up. And then those ideas just get sunk in, and then these cement trucks or these things come and they inform how we feel about ourselves. When with growth and with learning, it's like, no, those things don't define you. And, you know, to find the love for yourself and to realize that these thoughts are going to come, and like a leaf, you just kind of, as they escort in, you just watch them leave, and you don't, they don't get to like, you're not looking to build a tree with them, you know?
Yeah, totally. It's like they knock on your front door and you just bring them straight out the back. You're like, oh yeah, nice to see you. I've seen the tour, I've seen the house. Okay. And
exactly. Whereas when you're trying to figure that stuff out, and sometimes there's decades of us trying to figure it, you know, to really get that, that where we can let those thoughts come and go. It can be such a process, and everyone's journey is different. So wherever you are in your story, it's not like there's any fast track to getting there. It's just taking it at the time that you need to and finding supports that can help guide you on that journey. Because there is a lot of light, you know,
and
it can take some time to figure out how to put that light on in the room.
Yeah. Well said.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a journey, right?
Yeah.
And life is so,
it's so a journey, and recognizing too that we all have a different start in life, you know, like, and it's funny because I look back and my mom supported me every single step of the way. She knew the intimate details of what I was struggling with, and she was so there. She did so much work with us as little girls to remind us that we are beautiful, that our beauty is not our main source of value, that we're strong and capable and to be proud of our bodies, and that our bodies change. Like, my mom did not shy away from the hard conversations and reminded us, like, you know, your hormones might be telling you some like wild things today about who you are and about how you look. And it's not that you can't trust your body. It's just that sometimes there's things that influence how you feel about yourself, and you don't have to listen to those things, you know? And yet I still struggled quite a bit. And I think about, you know, people who are in scenarios where there is constant pressure from every angle to feel like they're enough and to control even more than I did. And it's just important to accept your story, like, to accept that it's not your fault is what I want to say, you know, that it doesn't all make sense, that it's not all linear, that it's not always, you know, that like causal relationship. Sometimes it just is, and it's okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're all in it, and you're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing to remember, is that you're not alone. I know this artist that we both love. And,
sorry.
No worries. This artist that we both love, Sleeping at Last, and he has a song that's called You Are Enough. And, you know, you think that those words are so simple. We should know that, or that it lands somewhere. But to hear those words, I remember him saying it on like the chorus, you are enough, you're enough, you're enough. I promise you this, these simple words, how they change us. And it's just like, to remind ourselves to sit with those words, to write it on our, you know, on our mirror, or put it on our, in our car, to remind ourselves that, like, no, we're enough. Like, we're not looking for someone to tell us that, but we need to define that for ourselves and find that for ourselves within this beautiful place we get to call home, this skin, these eyes, these hands, you know, this mind.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. It does take those reminders and those external, like, things to ground you. Those things to remind you of truth, and those exercises and practices, like, you're standing in front of the mirror, and until you could look at yourself and love yourself, it does take that. It takes that hard work, but it is so worth it. It is so worth it. And there's someone out there who's doing the same, who's also fighting the same battle.
Yeah, exactly. If there's one thing you could tell somebody who may be sitting in younger Gabrielle, you would want them to know from this point of view that you're at right now, what would be the one thing that you would want someone to know about themselves or about the journey?
I think right now the thing that comes to mind is, hold on, because it's going to be hard, and it does get worse sometimes, but it also gets way, way better than you could ever imagine.
Thanks, Gab. It does get way better.
Yeah.
We're sending you a big hug. Whoever's listening today, we are sending you a big giant hug from both Gab and I with our tears and our love. Yeah, just know that you're not alone in your journey, in your story. There's always hope. There's always somebody out there who can help guide you on your journey to a brighter, more light in your life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ditto that.
Yeah. before we kind of wrap up, I always love ending with something that I think oftentimes we overlook, we don't talk about in life. It's just a simple thing, but I think the reason why it came up is because I realize in conversations we get caught up like, how are you doing, like you know, the normal conversation, how's the weather where you're living, all these things. But the thing that I find really intriguing and beautiful is finding out where people are experiencing joy in their life.
Yeah.
So as we close and come to the completion of our time together, I wonder what in your life this week or recently that you find your brings you joy.
Lately, and this is not the case for me all the time, but I have been loving reading. I know you have a not so little one who loves Harry Potter, and I never read it growing up. And I feel bad for all the children that are waiting to read Harry Potter because a 24-year-old has it checked out of the library. I'm just loving it. And I'm a slower reader than a lot of people. And so people who are waiting for me are waiting for a while. So I guess the other thing I'm loving is the auto renew service that the library has now. I don't even have to see how many times I've renewed the book. It just does it for me.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I'm reading Harry Potter and then another book called A Matter of Death and Life. Again, totally different sides of the spectrum. One has been just so fun and it's such an easy read. And the other, I read a chapter and then I journal and I think about life and the end of it. And it sounds horrible, but it's actually exactly what I need right now. So that's what I'm loving in my life right now. What about you? Amazing.
What about me? Oh, I never get, never turns it around.
I got you. Hello, one, two.
Oh my gosh. Okay. oh man, I feel like what's bringing me joy right now? That's a really, I feel like there's a few different branches in my life that are bringing me joy. One would be being in a city. We're in Barcelona right now. And just I was telling you before we started recording the architecture and the beauty and like the colors, like Barcelona is a colorful place. We just went to an immersive museum today where you just like, you're taking in all this beauty, but they talk a lot about Barcelona and just like how art, sometimes you're just like, you know, you're just so awestruck. You're not really sure what it means. And you're just like, and that's the beauty of it. It's just like, we want to leave you people like never understanding. That's the beauty of it. Sometimes it's just like, you don't have to understand it, to just feel it, to like let it sink into you, you know. And going to the church, here, there's a beautiful church in Barcelona. I'm probably going to butcher the name, but it's something said around the lines of Sagrada Familia. I'm probably saying that wrong, but it's one of the most beautiful churches in, I think, in the world. And it's the architecture, that design, it was Gaudi, and just did a beautiful, beautiful job. It taking the outside of nature and putting it into the architecture of the inside of the church. It just is fascinating. If you ever come to Barcelona, I highly recommend coming to experience it. It's such a beautiful, and like my heart, I just sit there. They have all these pews and you can sit down and listen to the music. And I've only gone twice, but both times I sit there and I just start crying. I'm just like, there's such a beautiful presence in that space. And I just love it so, so much. So that definitely is bringing me a lot of joy, just experiencing the city and experiencing the culture here. And aside from that, I've been doing a lot of like reading and listening to podcasts. I've recently listened to Tony Robbins. A lot of you probably heard of him, know of him. He's a wonderful motivational speaker. And just learning from somebody with so much passion I guess getting reconnected to some of the things that I'm very passionate about myself. And being a mom of four, and I've got growing kids, and only three of them are home now. But I think as a parent, sometimes we can lose a season where we're maybe connect with, do the things that really connect us to like our core, like what makes you feel alive. And of course, being a mom makes me feel alive and I love it. But there's also parts of me that haven't maybe been tapped into. So I think in this season, just really diving into more of my, like, what makes Janelle alive, like come alive, like what are the things, and starting to write some of those things down to identify those things and then give them room to explore them. And how do I actually make those a part of my life and my journey that I'm in currently? So that's a very long answer, but those are
some of the things. No, I love that. Yeah. It's great to make time to talk about the things that you love and that are bringing you joy. So take all the time. Let's do it again from the top.
Yeah. Let's do it. Oh, thank you, Gab, for being here. Is there anything else you want to say, like to tie it up with, that comes to your mind, or?
Just an encouragement and invitation to people that it's worth the time to take the time to do what you love. And if you're in a season where you're feeling busy, I know that's not often in our control, especially as a mom, you know, there's lots of things that come up that fill your schedule that aren't in your control. But if you can give yourself 2 minutes to just sit and do something that makes you feel alive, I would so encourage you to do it. And if you can make it a habit, even better.
Yeah, that's great. I'm going to echo that with her and be like, take the time to do that. Even if it's just go putting your feet on grass and letting yourself just feel the, like the tickling, like we used to as kids.
Yeah.
Bring back some of that childlike.
Yeah.
Play. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Well, thank you so
much.
No, thank you. I really appreciate you being here, and thank you for listening. Those of you who would join us today, it means so much to you here joining us and listening to the stories that are unfolding as they do. I hope that you all have a beautiful day, that Gabby have a beautiful day, and sending you so much love from afar. I wish I could squeeze you and hug you, but for now it's from afar.
Yes. Aw. Love you, Auntie.
Love you, sweetie. Ciao.
Thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please take a moment to subscribe and leave a review wherever you get your podcast goodness. This way you'll never miss out on any future episodes, plus it really helps us. And if you want to share your favorite episode with a friend, that would be absolutely incredible. This goes a long way. If you'd like to join Naked by sharing part of your story, just leave us a message on Instagram or email us at nakedwithjanelle@gmail.com. Also, a big thanks to my son, Mikkel, who is the best cheerleader and maybe one of the biggest believers in Naked, and also produces and edits all our podcasts. I am beyond grateful for him and very aware that I couldn't do this on my own. Thank you so much for tuning in and for being here.